Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
That's not the moment that you're embracing right now.
Oh, dear.
Regardless, it's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
You may well have actually heard of Crohn's disease. If not, well, it's something which certainly has been around, sadly, for a number of years. It's a chronic progressive condition of the digestive system associated with inflammation and indeed mucosal ulceration. But enough of such stuff. Let's actually talk to somebody who actually has this condition. And indeed, there is some good news, but we'll share that later. First of all, we're delighted to welcome to the program, Nosheen. How are you, Nosheen?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Now, I know a couple of people who have actually had Crohn's disease from that point of view. I know their symptoms have been quite problematic. Share with us your own journey with this challenging, active aspect.
So I was diagnosed when I was quite young. I was 13. I had quite a lot of symptoms, which I thought was food poisoning. It was very similar to symptoms I had, like abdominal pain. I was making several trips to the toilet. And from then I got a diagnosis and it then progressed later on in my life. It just became more and more worse. And now I've got a stoma bag and I'm now in remission.
Well, it's good to see that obviously you're in remission. I mean, clearly, the next question is going to be sort of fairly obvious. How did it impact your life? I mean, clearly that will have had a major effect, certainly on your teenage years.
Yeah, 100%. So I feel like because in my teenage years, I would say when I got to around 18, 19, it affected me the most. As a young adult, you would expect me to be able to do certain things, just having independence, being able to do certain things, going out with my friends, those kind of things stopped. And I was literally left bedbound. I didn't have much a social life at all. Didn't speak to anybody. It was more so just going to the hospital and going back home, going to the hospital, going back home. It impacted me quite a lot.
Mm. Now, we did say that there was some positive news. And actually today, we've actually had an announcement saying that there is a new option of a once a day a pill inhibitor for Crohn's disease. I mean, we're not going to go into the specifics of this, obviously, but in terms of that, is this something which you feel... it's arrived. It's a pity it wasn't a bit earlier for me.
I always feel like it's a good thing to hear when there's new treatment around. It always gives you hope to anyone who's struggling with their symptoms, and it's something to look forward to anyone out there who's struggling with their symptoms right now.
Now, as I mentioned, I know a couple of people who have actually had Crohn's disease, or indeed still do, with respect to that. What advice would you give, Nosheen, to people who might initially be devastated with a diagnosis from that point of view and think, well, okay, what is it the end of everything? Hopefully not. Is there a way in which you can actually overcome this challenge?
So I know the saying there's light at the end of the tunnel is probably a cliche for a lot of people, but I do stick by it. There was a point in time where I also thought that this was going to be my life forever, just being sick, and I wouldn't go back to being the person that I was. I felt like I had lost my identity. But I would say to anybody who is struggling out there that things do get better, and it might not be right now. It might not be in the next couple of months. It might even be in the next couple of years, but things do eventually get better once you find the right treatment for you, and you will go back to being who you were, and things do get better. Mm.
And this is, of course, as we mentioned, a treatment option for moderately to severely active Crohn's disease. And again, some of the facts here, it's estimated that over 155,000 adults are currently living with the condition in the United Kingdom, and almost half have moderate or severe Crohn's disease from that point of view. I'm just thinking in terms of when you were, just returning back to your own case, when you first received this diagnosis, was it a case of, well, at least I know what it is now? Or was it a case of you were just bamboozled by the whole essence of the science behind it, really?
Yeah, so I was 13 when I got my diagnosis. So as you can imagine, I was quite young. I didn't really understand the whole concept of Crohn's disease. Despite my brother having it, I didn't have much knowledge on Crohn's disease. So in my head, it was more so, it was just an illness that affects your stomach, and maybe I would have to take a few more trips to the toilet more than a regular person would have to. I didn't understand the severity of the situation. Like I said, I was quite young, so I didn't really understand. But yeah.
Mm. Well, as we've said, the good news is that NICE has actually recommended today that eligible people with Crohn's disease can hopefully receive this treatment on the NHS in England and Wales. Is there any particular place you would point people to if they want to have further information, or you'd like to actually find out more about the symptoms of Crohn's disease and indeed perhaps this new treatment as well?
I would say the NHS website is always informative. Instagram is also a very good social media platform for anybody who wants advice. There's always there's the Crohn's and Colitis UK page. That's always good as well. There's people on there who are also going through a similar situation. So if there's any advice or you just need somebody to talk to you about what's going on, somebody you can relate, I feel like those are good places to go.
Excellent. Well, it's been fascinating and inspiring talking to you, good self, today, Nisheen. So that is good news that there is treatment likely to be available from that point of view. I think it's actually, I've avoided the pronunciation from this point of view, I think it's upadacitinib, basically, that's actually around in terms of the thing you need to look for. But for the moment, Nisheen, many thanks indeed, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
Time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Who do we know in Berwick-upon-Tweed?
We don't.
It's from Queenie Hennessy. She's in a hospice.
Is that a letter?
For a friend. She has cancer.
My aunt had cancer. But you can't give up. It's about what's in here.
And your aunt got better because you believe she could?
She said it gave her hope.
Could I leave a message for Queenie Hennessy?
Tell her Harold Fry is on his way. I'll keep walking and she must keep living.
Harold?
I'm walking a long way, but I haven't quite got the hang of it yet.
Yes, Dad.
Where are you?
I'm going to save Queenie Hennessy.
Have you been drinking?
The only time you walk is to get to the car.
I need to do this, Maureen.
Walk to Berwick-upon-Tweed. It can only be about 500 miles. Have you seen the news? You're everywhere.
Everyone's so nice.
I have a spare room. You can stay the night.
Thank you.
I'm going to save Queenie too.
My husband, he needs to be stopped.
I see.
He's walking the length of England. He could cause an accident.
What he's doing, it's beautiful.
I wish you'd come home.
You could do this too. Anyone can do what I'm doing. You just have to let go of the things you think you need. I've spent my life not doing anything. And now at last I am.
Don't you get scared?
Since I've been in the open, it seems it's less to be afraid of.
Did you have a son?
I'm afraid I failed my son very badly.
You couldn't even say goodbye!
You have to believe in him.
I want to come home. My son.
You're nearly there. 18 miles. That's nothing.
Travel the length of England to save a woman from dying.
Maybe it's what the world needs right now. A little less sense and a bit more faith.
Near catastrophic with multiple near collisions. I wonder if that's what is impacting Richard Fitzwilliams today. Not that, as far as I'm aware, he actually drives, but maybe he's in hot pursuit of a whole range of things. A story which certainly filled in as was keen to actually follow up on as far as the Midweek Drive Live recently was concerned, until we actually said, Phil, we know that you're near neighbours to the Duke and Duchess of Sussex in your Montecito environment in California. But honestly, everything they say may be a little bit exaggerated. That's just my thought. But what about Australia? Keen followers of both Harry and Meghan, Natasha Wanton, has this been a case of saying, Yeah, it's got to the stage where everybody in Australia is having to take scuba diving lessons just to avoid the fact that they might actually be entering into this particular field.
I don't think it's got quite that far yet, Alex. It has been on the news. It was usually royal news is a bit more of a downplay. It doesn't normally make such big headlines as this one has. It has been quite heavily covered, which is, as I say, not normal. I guess what's drawing it is they're showing a lot of the footage of Diana. They're showing a lot of parallels. So I suppose that's what's grabbing all the scenes and making the headlines. Do I think it was possibly as crazy as it could be? I don't think it was maybe as dramatic as it might have been, but I suppose if you've got that childhood trauma, it could play on your mind. We know that Harry's certainly got an long-standing issues with the press and particularly the paparazzi because of what happened with his mother. So was that in his mind, and is that why he's getting worked up? I don't know. It's tricky to try and psychoanalyze someone whose mind is possibly not the most straightforward. But no, I it's not an experience I'd certainly like to be part of. I think it must be quite scary, even if it's not to the extent that it's been made out to be.
Some may say he and or Meghan might have been cynically manipulating the history of the late Princess of Wales by actually looking to impact, no pun intended, this particular side of things. New York City, at its best, you're not going to get much greater than, shall we say, 10 minutes, a two-hour high-speed car chase, which ends with people actually jumping out of one security vehicle into a yellow New York taxi cab. Seems a little bit excessive, shall we say? Or are we just being overly cruel? And is it a case that, fundamentally, we don't understand? We don't understand the sheer agony that the Sussexes are actually going through when they're pursued relentlessly by the press, when all they're trying to do is to simply say, "We don't want any publicity. We don't want any publicity. We want to stay away from that publicity." Could they have actually sort of said, "This is one thing that's guaranteed to get sympathy," and yet apparently very few, if any, of their celebrity friends have actually come out in support of what they've been doing. Maybe they should actually take up that statement I've said many times before. Why not actually get together with Andrew? He needs to vacate his premises. Yeah, Andrew, Harry, and Meghan head off to China. Beijing would welcome them with open arms. I'm sure they could actually sort of settle down there and have all the privacy they wanted, because they'd have top level security on the whole thing. It would be a simple solution and would avoid any near catastrophic collisions and so on. What say you, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, I say that you are being very mischievous, Alex, but it was a very entertaining beginning. And I have to say, yes, firstly, my comments of the news channel and other stations, I would put this in context. All we got, as you know, to begin with, was the timeline that the Sussexes gave. So I had to comment on that, and also I had to comment with reference to the paparazzi, who I cordially loathe, and also the fact that there was a very nasty and unpleasant incident, which your summary didn't really take on
What
board.
incident was that, Richard? What incident was that?
And they were pursued by paparazzi,
For 2 hours?
Alex. Ah, now there, of course, you have the glitch, a very important glitch. And if you read the mayor's statement on
Recollections may vary, I feel, Richard.
Yes, indeed, they may. No. I mean, you can't have a chase for 2 hours in Manhattan. I mean, it's almost impossible anyway. And I mean, the whole, if
Well,
you
they could if
break
they
down.
cleared all the streets and actually had it as a Tom Cruise movie. Perhaps that was Meghan's attempt to actually move into the big blockbuster movie series, but they didn't actually inform the mayor of New York at the time, really.
Well, I think that the timeline goes something like this. For something like an hour and a quarter, they were keen to avoid others, i.e., the paps, the press, knowing where they were staying. It appears that that 75 minutes was spent in avoiding or attempting to avoid unsuccessfully the pursuing paparazzi. They therefore then go to a police station and apparently appear to be given a taxi. Now, there wasn't a police escort, apparently, and they had security, which appears to be only one person with them. Also, Doria was with them, and that, I think, was also particularly upsetting. Here's the thing. They go back, they go to the police station, they get a cab. The cab notices paparazzi, and it returns to the police station. They spend another 15 minutes or some such, eventually another 10 minutes, and the cab takes them to where they are, and they leave the paparazzi behind. But all of this, the complexities of the precise timeline on this, I do think there is a problem, because clearly lots of question marks, a huge amount of questions have been asked about their security, why it wasn't much better, and why also, since they entered the room, Megan was being given the Woman of Vision award by MS Magazine. It was their 50th anniversary commemoration, and they entered the building in a way that avoided the paparazzi. Why didn't they leave in the same way? No answers.
So, where in your account then, Richard, do the catastrophic, near-catastrophic with multiple near-collisions descriptor, where does that actually come into play? Because, frankly, I don't see it, really.
Well, I quote the mayor. He said it was reckless and irresponsible. And also, in an interesting aside, which I quoted on Good Morning Britain, he also said that two of his police officers were or could have been injured. Now, the accusations of the Sussexes is that the paparazzi, and we were told firstly that there were six vans with, or six cars with their windows blacked out. Now, that sounds pretty sinister. And it undoubtedly was unpleasant. But the accusations were that they...
Do you think they're confusing the paparazzi with the mafia in terms of actually being, you know, taken out? You know, again, it seems interesting that this is being raised at the same time as obviously there's a demand to try and increase their security to the level that they actually had when they were working royals. Or am I just being cynical?
You are being cynical, but you are also dealing with the fact. It is a fact that that is in court at the moment. Now, Harry has five, or as you, if you, depending how you count it, six cases in court at the moment. About three of newspaper groups, I think there are four cases involved there, and there are two against the Home Office for downgrading their security when they cease to be senior working royals, and he wants to pay for it, which would also, if he paid for the police, the problem there, of course, is if you set a precedent that the rich can pay for the police, well, what about those who aren't?
You might have some equality in society.
Oh, what was that, Alex? The E word.
Yeah, equality. No, or egalitarianism.
There is a very, very definite feeling here that the Sussexes, in their statements about what undoubtedly was a horrible incident, there's no doubt about that. And also one, we haven't mentioned Diana. I think, Alex, you were trying to avoid going back all those years, but I mean, obviously, as far as Harry's concerned...
Why not exploit your late mother? Exactly.
He's undergoing therapy and, well, I mean, he said every time there's a click of a camera, this is what brings back. Well, I mean, obviously, it's obvious what this did. So, I mean, it's a sort of thing...
Well,
I can't
Norman know. Bates, a character in Psycho, of course, used to channel his late mother as well, and he didn't actually end up well in any shape or form.
Alex, may I... you have muted me twice. I really feel that that comment... is perhaps one that could cause controversy if anyone actually heard it.
Well, let's move on to another royal birth, which is important, and I'm shocked you haven't actually mentioned that another royal birth is on its way, and we can congratulate the former Prince Royal of Downing Street and, of course, the Empress, who partnered with him for about actually having their third child, effectively. So no news as far as that's concerned, Richard, or is it a case of... Well, you know, perhaps it was all sabotaged by Harry and Meghan's near-catastrophic chase.
No, well, I read that apparently, by royal birth, I thought you meant that there'd been a surprise birth. Princess Eugenie is pregnant, as you know, and I thought you'd heard of it, and I hadn't. But, of course, the Emperor himself and Carrie. What else? Who else could they be?
Exactly. The best Prime Minister and First Lady the Ukraine has ever seen. Anyway, let's move on to the trailer, which actually had Natasha Wanton in tears in so many ways. Even though he was walking, he wasn't likely to be engaging in catastrophic collisions or anything from that point of view. Jim Broadbent and Penelope Wilton, who pretty much act by themselves for the majority of this particular text. We didn't have time to feature it last week, so would you like to take us through the unlikely pilgrimage of Harold Fry?
It is from the south, right the tip of England, he walks to Berwick-on-Tweed. Why does he do it? Firstly, let's be clear. I mean, Jim Broadbent is an extremely good actor. Also, he's recently thoroughly enjoyed playing these rather quintessentially eccentric figures, except that I thought initially that this film was based on not a novel, but real life.
It no. is
based on a novel. Alex, of course, you see good everywhere I know, and in this case, it's a pilgrimage that's started when, I mean, to paint the picture, we have Jim Broadbent and Penelope Wilson as Harold and Maureen, and they're living in they're a loveless marriage. They've been pretty loveless, I have to say, for 25 years.
Like Harry and Meghan, then, basically.
It's Alex. It is a question of their detestation of each other is such that they can hardly speak to each other, but nonetheless, when one leaves,
5 years, Richard, 5 years. How long is it going to last, really? If you're constantly being seen as being representative of your mother-in-law, it's not going to help.
And when it comes, however, to the fact that Penelope Wilton's Maureen discovers that, well, her husband, quite literally, he goes to post a letter to Queenie, played by Linda Bassett. Queenie was an old acquaintance, or was she more than an acquaintance, with whom he had something, we discover more as the film progresses, to do with when he was more active. Now, both of them are living lives that aren't worth living, and they don't relate to each other. And it's a hopeless domestic situation, but it's simply the thought of being without each other that perhaps keeps them together. Anyway, it certainly livens up Maureen when Harold, quite literally deciding to post a letter, then decides he's going to walk the length and breadth of the whole country, and he's going to take some weeks doing it. And he hasn't even got a change of clothes or anything. He's just on...
The kindness of strangers, Richard. The kindness of strangers.
He is en route. Now, this film has a series of very good points, particularly in its first part, because some of the performances, and particularly playing Martina, Monica Grossman, I mean, en route, he meets all sorts of people, some strange, some delightful, a complete mix. And she gives a very, very good cameo, which is where this film is rather strong, in some of the cameo performances, as an immigrant who's a doctor and can only find a job as a cleaner, and puts him up and tries to patch him up, because after all, you just start walking. You haven't even got the shoes. All of this. Yes, it is a movie that is heartwarming. It is a movie where photographs are taken of him, and unsurprisingly, in this age that we're at, he becomes a great hit on social media. And of course, the walk becomes famous. Others join the walk. What, however, is the real purpose of the walk? Well, he had been originally told, and believes, we discover a little more as the film progresses, by simply someone selling in a candy store, that when she inspired, or when her grandmother was inspired, she was able somehow to beat cancer. He believes that Queenie, to whom, as I say, there is a debt, we discover a bit more later in the movie, and she's in a hospice, but despite that, he believes that his walking will help her, and indeed help her to actually recover. He
sacrifice, Richard. It's all about the sacrifice that you make to ensure that good things will manifest in the great cosmos in which we live.
Goodness, Alex, you're waxing philosophical today. Well, the philosophy in the movie is clear because, yes, the walk is based on human nature at its best, a certain amount of kindness, a certain amount of, well, integrity from someone who's really done nothing in his life and realizes it to somebody who wants to do something.
But he's done one important thing, Richard. It's to do with his own child.
It may well be that there is part of a plan. I'm waiting for you to tell us all about it, Alex. I mean, you know, why don't you actually...
No, I don't believe in spoilers, Richard. You know that. I leave that to you.
Say how it ends and why Harold and Maureen are as estranged as they are. The facts, however, parts of the story unravel and there are flashbacks. And indeed, I have to say that parts of it, frankly, don't work because, yes, there's a son involved.
Look out, there could be a near collision there, near fatal, catastrophic there. Could be a plane catastrophically encountering with your good self in North London, Richard. Sorry, just panicking, obviously. And up for 2 hours.
Well, I mean, one of the problems of the movie is as he walks, they've got a neighbour they're very close to. Well, he appears in the walk as a sort of fantasy figure. And then, yes, Alex has told you all about the son. I'm surprised it doesn't mention the actual details of it. But it's not, I mean, it is the tragedy of their lives. And, yes, David appears in... Well, he actually appears during the walk, coming towards Harold. One of the difficulties of this movie, however, is its length. Stretched over an
it's
hour.
It's a long walk. It's over 500 miles from the southwest of England to Berwick.
Here's the problem. It's 2 hours and there are so many close-ups.
Just like a car chase with Harry and Meghan in many ways.
Jim Broadbent. I wouldn't say it was a car wreck of a movie because actually it's gone on rather well. But there are too many close-ups. Also, there are certain devices, as I say, the fantasy figures appearing that don't work. Yes, fair enough, the backstory of their son, that is told and one empathises. But again, to make this walk into a sort of national crusade, and which happens at one time when social media spreads the word, there are a lot of cliches in this movie, not so much in the first half, which I have to say I much enjoyed, but in the second, I mean, Jim Broadbent specializes, for example, in playing an eccentric who really did exist, somebody who stole Goya's portrait of the Duke of Wellington from the National Gallery, for example. He's been in a lot of movies. We know Penelope Wilton, and they're very reliable figures, but I did get tired of the endless, ceaseless concentration of close-ups on Jim Broadbent because I just felt that the movie could have been a bit more subtle as it progressed. So I was somewhat exhausted by, well, let's say the sheer level of energy required to keep watching something that was...
It's a long walk, Richard. You're meant to be exhausted.
Yes,
the whole essence of that, as the writer actually said when she was writing the book, she actually used the metaphor of the journey when she was exhausted and couldn't write another word on the page. It's carried through. It's art living as life, living as art.
And I will accept that it is something. Did you see it? You were much moved by it. You were enthralled by it.
I'm always moved by such things, especially when it's Jim Broadbent. Natasha Wanton, is this one for you?
Oh, I was ready to give this a 10 when I saw the trailer. I was weeping at the trailer. I'm going to try and cry not now. Not try not to cry now. I'm tongue-tied. Like I'm so desperate to see this movie. I love Jim Broadbent. I think he's very good at just portraying that sort of everyman character that you can really relate to, you can really empathize to. And I got it straight away with this. That's how good that 2 minutes I saw were. I understand from what Richard's saying that there may be some issues with the pacing. There may be some issues in some of the camera choices and the amount of clips on there. But I don't mind so much the idea of the cliches. I think in a film like this, where it's trying, from what I gather, from what Richard has said and from what I've seen, where it's trying to sort of give people a bit of an inspiration that, you know, to showcase, you know, the hope and kindness in a way that's relatable and acceptable to, you know, most people. And I think that that's a really lovely thing for them to try and do. So I will take
this teach. How much could this teach Meghan and Harry about the importance of self-sacrifice?
Well, I mean, that's the issue, though, isn't it? Because you get so much nonsense on the news, and then, you know, you kind of need a film like this that just sort of gives you a big hug and reassures you that, you know, there is goodness in the world and there are good people, and they, and it can be everyday people who, you know, come from generally normal backgrounds. It doesn't have to be something aspirational. Anyone can do it. And I love the line, Gandalf sort of line, that it, you know, it's a little bit of kindness. It's a small act of kindness that keep the darkness at bay. And I do truly believe that. And I think that's what this film is showcasing. So I really want to see it. I'm going to get emotional. So I'm going to stop talking. But yeah, this one's really got me.
Absolutely right.
Natasha, what can I say after that? I mean, Hetty MacDonald directs. Had it been half an hour shorter, it would have made it for me, and I would have been infinitely more positive, because there's a very, very real problem when you've got lots of flashbacks, you've got lots of close-ups, and also, to be honest, I mean, before Alex tells you, there are no surprises in this film, but not really, but nonetheless, yes, I mean, why not? There is a certain amount of kindness, a certain amount of inspiration. He's trying to do good because he's never done anything, and which of us indeed could not do something for someone else or believe that they are doing something for someone else? I ought to add that Ryder, before Alex tells you exactly what it is, I'm not sure whether he's seen it or not, or just having fun.
Such
you never know with Alex.
Meant...
That's all part of the fun. You never know with Alex. He keeps us guessing.
No, it does indeed. It does indeed. This is a film that really doesn't keep you guessing. But yes, I mean, it's done very well critically. It's done better critically than I have to say I would have. I mean, it's a fair performance by Jim Broadbent.
Done better than Johnny Depp's movie later we'll be doing, but that's another thing entirely. Let's move on. That's another thought, actually. I did feel that's another solution, effectively, for the Sussexes. If they're not willing to actually learn Mandarin and actually go to China with Prince Andrew, why not a little bit of swap seats? Why not actually swap partners, and Meghan could actually pair up with Johnny Depp, and Harry could hook up with Amber Heard? You know, I think that would probably work in terms of another way forward. And I'm sure they would be able to actually cope with the vicissitudes of life, if that was another suggestion.
It's an important point, Alex. It's an important point, because Johnny Depp's triumph at Cannes, I mean, in playing Louis the 15th, I mean, I mean, it's interesting. Some of the reviews have been very funny. The one I saw in the Telegraph compared him to Mrs. Slocum of Are You Being...
Does he stroke his pussy, Richard, on a regular basis?
Yes, it did indeed. Absolutely. The famous in-joke. But Depp has actually, I mean, one of the things that one has to say this with Harrison Ford and another Indiana Jones appearing as well. I mean, there's no doubt at all.
He looks so young these days, I feel, Harrison. So young. It's wonderful.
I was very impressed by what I saw of him. It was just photographs. I haven't seen the footage. But nonetheless, at least if only it could bring audiences to the cinema here, because I hate to tell Natasha this, because if you have tears, Natasha, prepare to shed them now. A quote from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, of course. When I saw the unlikely pilgrimage...
Richard, from the bottom line, Shakespeare never actually said, "Friends, Romans and cinema goers, lend me your seats."
There was no one else in the cinema.
That's really sad. That disappoints me.
It's almost, Richard, as though you're on a pilgrimage yourself.
It is sad. It's sort of a problem. I mean, Cannes at least is getting his new Martin Scorsese movie. There are controversial movies in competition, and radical feminists making protests, and Thierry Fermoy, who's the head of the president, making comments defending Depp and saying that what Cannes is interested in is the artistry and not the personal
life.
That's
why they like Roman Polanski.
Well, actually, it's a very important point, Alex, because Polanski actually, one of his films anyway, appeared at Cannes, as I remember, 2 or 3 years ago. And again, that caused absolute fury. This is one about Dreyfus. And if you want to see it online, and I'm not saying I've looked, I'm simply saying that you can't get it. But it would be interesting, hypothetically, please don't mistake me, to see Polanski's take on Dreyfus, because I remember José Ferrer in that role. It was a 1950s film, and it is, of course, celeb in France still. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Cannes, as I say, with new films from top directors, there's also another from Ken Loach, who's 86, the male directors tend to be, quite a lot of them, of older, but nonetheless, it is part, it's modernizing to some extent, because obviously we want more female directors. This is the way it's going in Britain and, of course, in Hollywood, where, of course, the writer's strike, I'm afraid, has got underway, which we dealt with before. But can at least, there's a lot of the fashion, the colorful antics and so forth. And the more the better, because, I mean, it brings cinema into the news a bit, which it hasn't been. And, you know, it's
been overshadowed by Harry and Meghan. You know, hence my reason for maybe they need to pair up with Johnny and Amber and, you know, raise that interest level a little bit.
Well, Johnny Depp did very well with the reception for the film, but not necessarily actually at Cannes. But so far as the reviews are concerned, they've been very mixed. But, we'll have to wait and see for ourselves about and his scandalous mistress. I can't picture Depp as...
If you're partner to somebody who actually leaves poo-poos in your bed, it's obviously going to be problematic.
Alex, you know, it just so happened that flashed to my mind, and I thought he won't mention it and I won't sully the reputation.
Look, a bit of eschatology, it's always good, let's face it. So actually just throw it in there.
You've simply got Alex giving a performance of his own today. It's not necessary for us, I don't think, to say anything, is it?
I think it... look, if Alex wants to use the platform, it's all good for me. It's an interesting film, and I'll be interested to see what you think of it if you do happen to watch it, Richard, because I've heard very mixed things, if you said, in the reviews. I've heard that it's the acting, the quality of the acting, I've heard, is quite good, but that the general, there's no real tension, apparently. It sort of doesn't really go anywhere, particularly as it goes on. It's a bit long, is what I've heard. So I'm not sure if that's the case, because I was interested in seeing it because it's a role that I've not really seen Depp in before, which did interest me, because I, you know, regardless of his personal life and all the other stuff that's going on, whether you like him, whether you hate him, I do appreciate some of the stuff that he does as an actor. I do find some of his roles to be quite interesting. I found in the past that he tends to play roles that can be quite similar. If you look at his sort of Jack Sparrow, a lot of his roles since then have sort of leaned back towards that sort of original Jack Sparrow kind of role. So I thought it would be interesting here to see him play a role that is quite different from that, and see how that... So that's where my intrigue is. And I suppose that might be where a number of people's intrigues is. But I was disappointed to learn that it was so mixed. So I want to know what you think, and then maybe that'll decide my decision on whether or not it's worth venturing and wasting my time on.
Fear and Loathing in Cannes. Of course, I was just corrected that indeed What's Eating Gilbert Grape was more a vehicle for Leonardo DiCaprio as opposed to Johnny Depp. Well worth accessing that. I thought Richard would pick me up on that, but it's okay.
I'm letting you just have your head, Alex. You're just full steam ahead.
Unlike, of course, Kate Middleton's mother and, of course, her party business, which is no longer full steam ahead, and it has ceased to be. How are they going to cope? How are the Middleton family going to actually cope now that their family party favours business has actually gone belly up? It's a worry.
There was something, incidentally. I wanted to just check that my memory was correct on this, and Natasha, if I could just make a comment about Depp. He was very, very good playing the libertine playing the Earl of Rochester in The Libertine, which was a first-class movie set at the time of Charles II. John Malkovich played Charles II, and the clash between the two characters. It's true that Rochester was the famous debauchee in Libertine. Charles was tolerant until, unwisely, Rochester actually mocks him in a theatrical performance as a priapic character whom everyone laughs at. That's going too far. And
much the same can be said about our King Charles, who apparently has yet to pick up the phone to ask if the near catastrophic incident actually has ended safely for his second son.
I might remind you, Alex, that the Libertine is an excellent film because you really see London what it was like in those days. You've got an atmosphere and an ambience that is very, very well conveyed, the filth of the streets and so forth, paralleled by the, very, very heavily flawed existence of Depp and Rochester. He was infamous. He was absolutely infamous, but it was a good film, and it also starred Samantha Morton and Rosamund Pike. And, of course, as you will recall, I think it was around that time it was women were allowed on the stage because previously they hadn't been. So there's Depp in a challenging role, but perhaps also rather lifelike.
Of course, as they said back in the... As they said back in the 17th century, as Natasha, thanks Richard for that very important thing. I seem to recall who said, look, if we allow women on the stage, it'll leave us with Meghan Markle in 300 years from now. And that's where we kind of came in. After having launched this particular program with a wonderful new cure, potentially for Crohn's disease, or new treatment, shall we say, for Crohn's disease, we move on to consider other marvellous things. The Pale Blue Eye, that wonderful mid-19th century Netflix epic, will again have to wait, Richard, and basically sit down for a little bit of calm and peace until it emerges like a wonderful, glorious, phoenix-like blossom. In
but
a week or so's time.
Alex, we're cutting now two films down to one. I thought we had 10 minutes.
We actually have a little bit over 5 minutes, Richard, but there's still more to be packed into the programme. And I feel that The Pale Blue Eye, Natasha hasn't seen it as yet. I will have a chance to look at it at Netflix. Yes, I've been involved mostly with marking scripts and other such things and essays about comparative media history and so on, some of which are great, some of which, frankly, I wonder why they even bothered submitting. But never mind. That's by the by. No names, obviously, because I don't believe in spoilers. But for now, to Natasha Wanton and to Richard Fitzwilliams, keep watching the movies.
Oh, sweet girl McCree, I would love to be down on Banner's lonely shore, or to watch as those ships went sailing. We'd watch them come in to shore. But oh, sweet girl McCree, I would love to be down on Banner's lonely shore. And all those good old times we used to know, we really had everything I know. For we'd watch as those ships went sailing, we'd watch them come in But oh, sweet Gallimacree, I would love to be down on Banner's lonely shore, and all those birds that fly up in the sky, their sweet notes did cry. For we'd watch as those ships went sailing, they'd lead them into the shore. But oh, sweet Gallimacree, I would love to be down on Banner's lonely shore. For we'd watch as those ships went sailing, we'd watch them come in to shore. But oh, sweet Gallimacree, I would love to be down on Banner's lonely shore. And oh, sweet Gallimacree, I would love to be down on Banner's lonely shore.
Altruism. Is it as self-sacrificing as it ever was? And what about generation to generation's views and perspectives on altruism, etc.? Apparently, every age group believes itself to be the most generous generation of all. Well, let's find out a little bit more about this work from GiveStar's very own Alex Coleridge. How are you, Alex?
Good morning, Alex. Hi. Nice to be here.
Great. Now, this survey, more than 2,000 people asked which generations the public perceived to be generous, with just 3% of adults aged over 43 labeling Generation Z, or Generation Z, obviously, if you're in the States, as a giving bunch. I mean, is this just a case of, you know, the notion of altruism is not there? I mean, were you surprised by these findings?
Well, we were definitely surprised by these findings. When we commissioned this nationally representative research, we expected to find that the UK was a very philanthropic nation. And that is what we found. It's really quite inspiring to see every generation really partaking in giving and fundraising. But what surprised us was the level of engagement that Gen Z, this youngest generation, have when it comes to volunteering, fundraising and giving. They're much more likely to have volunteered in the last year. They're fundraising more than their parents, and they're even giving 12% more than the national average, despite having lower incomes, which is great because this generation, this younger generation of people between 18 and 26, are often unfairly criticized for hanging out on social media and not taking action. But it looks like from this research that actually they are putting their money where their mouth is.
There was a well-known song in the 1980s by a band called Musical Youth, which started this generation, rule the nation with version. I won't do the actual singing version of that, but what the hey. I mean, is it a case of, in terms of that notion of making sacrifices or so on, and actually donating things? I mean, again, looking at the, I wasn't aware of Boomer 2 generations, which was 59 to 68-year-olds, as opposed to Boomers 1, the initial 69 to 77-year-olds. They're kind of fairly low down the list. Is that because they feel they've already done enough? You know, like, how much more do you want us to give, for instance?
Yes, it's possible. It does seem like there's a bit of there's a trend that goes up and down in people's lives, depending on their life stage. And so we are seeing these younger Gen Z and millennial people giving more. It might be that there's less demands on their disposable income. It might also be that they are much more passionate and connected than we give them credit for. When people enter their kind of mid-stage life, there's probably a lot more demands on their wallet. And then when we get up to the eldest generations, there's a sort of return to giving that kind of completes the circle.
In some ways, donating and giving, it has never been simpler. I mean, there are lots of ways forward. I mean, what makes GiveStar as a new fundraising platform different from any of the other plurality of things that are actually out there saying, donate money now?
Well, our mission is ultimately to make philanthropic giving and fundraising much easier. And there's some ways we do that that really plug into kind of the innovation story. So we let people access our platform both online and also on their phones, where we've got over 170,000 charities available to make frictionless gifts to. But also, crucially, we make it much more social. So we allow people to find out what their friends and family care about and their colleagues, and also to connect directly with the charities on the platform. So a lot more opportunities for charities to tell their story, deliver really awesome content. And that's actually a really important thing for, in particular, this younger generation, because they're much more used to getting high quality content and also to be much more socially connected to their peers. That kind of thing really drives philanthropic giving if charities can seize that opportunity to engage younger people on their terms.
The literal definition of philanthropy, of course, is love of human beings. Oftentimes people prefer to donate anonymously. Does GiveStar provide you with that opportunity? If you don't want to say, look at me, look at how much I'm giving.
Absolutely. I think it's so important to be able to give anonymously. And actually what we say is give anonymously, give with your own name attached. But as long as you're giving, you're making a really important difference on the platform. And there's lots of opportunities out there to support amazing people doing amazing things. And we're talking here about national statistics, but really what's hidden behind those are just awesome stories. Great example for you. We've got, there's a young guy on the platform at the moment called Russ Cook. He goes by the name The Hardest Geezer on social media. And he's actually running the entire continent of Africa at the moment. That's 360 marathons in 240 days, including running across the Sahara Desert, the Congo, the Namib. It's a really impressive,
altruism or insanity, depending on which way you look at it, I would have thought, really. But what the heck?
Rather him than me. But it's very inspiring. And he's raising money for WaterAid UK and an amazing charity called The Running Charity. And if you want to find out more about what he's up to, you can just search for Project Africa on our website, givestar.io. It's a very cool story.
And in terms of the cost of living crisis that clearly is still with us and so on, are you seeing any trends in terms of, even with the difficult situations that many people are faced with, there's still no evidence that it's really impacting negatively on people's altruistic tendencies?
I think there is definitely a feeling that the cost of living crisis is impacting, and you would expect that. But having said that, there is also clearly something that's very deeply rooted in a lot of people in the UK who are very generous and very committed and very altruistic. And despite the cost of living crisis, people are still fundraising and they're still giving in record numbers. And that's a really positive news story in the midst of a lot of doom and gloom.
And share with us once again, Alex, the best way to actually get in touch with GiveStar online.
Best way to get in touch with GiveStar online, search for us at givestar.io, or feel free to follow us on social media, GiveStar, or even message me on Twitter at AJ Coleridge, and I endeavour to reply to all messages I get.
It's been great connecting with you, good self, today. Alexander Coleridge, founder of GiveStar, creator of GiveStar, from GiveStar.
One of the two founders of GiveStar.
Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you so much, Alex.